is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time, and I'm just hearing that Vladimir Putin has agreed to stop bombing Ukraine until Priti Patel's new visa application scheme is up and ready on Tuesday. I'm only joking. Kids still sleeping in cars, people still desperately trying to find refuge and asylum, but we might be ready by Tuesday to make things a tiny bit easier than they currently are, and we'll still be the worst in the whole of Europe. But hey-ho. On we go. It's 3 minutes after 12. It's Thursday, and you can tell by the cheery music in the background that the mood is about to change, rather markedly. It's time for Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. If you're not familiar with this feature, if you join us for the grown-up stuff, I hope and believe that you're in for a pleasant surprise, although you may be alienated by the immaturity and frivolity that follows. I can assure you that come 1 o'clock today, normal service will be resumed and Sheila Fogarty will be steering you back into the major issues of the moment. But for now, we are having a bit of fun. What happens is this, you ring in with a question and the question is put on the metaphorical board. It's a who, why, what, where, when, whither, whether, even the occasional wherefore, whatever your question may be, as long as it's not silly or boring. You ring in with a question. Somebody listening to the programme hears you ask your question and thinks, oh, I think I know the answer to that. And they then ring in with the answer. At which point, having listened to the alleged answer, I ask them what their qualifications are. And they reveal the reason why they know the thing, what they know. And it doesn't have to be that you have a PhD in astrophysics. It could simply be that you saw it on the telly last night. But it might be that you have a PhD in astrophysics. It might also be, somewhat embarrassingly, that you know the answer to the question that's been asked because you bought the Mystery Hour board game for Christmas, have played it, and the question that I have forgotten the answer to, or forgotten even that it had ever been asked, actually features in the new-ish Mystery Hour board game that's available from mysteryhour.co.uk. That also counts as a qualification. I'm just highlighting how low the bar is, really, because you don't need to be... Anyway, I've now highlighted how low the bar is. If your qualifications turn out to be truly exceptional, if, in other words, it is almost beyond belief that somebody with your qualifications was listening to this modest radio entertainment at this precise moment when that exact question was asked, if, in other words, at least five planets align in the contribution you make to the programme, then you may receive the highest offer. And we've been quite stingy. We haven't had one for a while, have we? Did we have any last week? I can't remember. We've been quite stingy with them lately. You will receive a Ray Liotta. Which is not an aquatic mammal that lives in an Essex town. It's a Hollywood star. It just depends where you put the paws. Ray Liotta, not Rayleigh Otter. All right, it's a bit of an in-joke. Maybe you had to be there. 6 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we crack on? I think we should. We're good to go? Okay. I stress again. Back into the deep end. Come 1 o'clock today. Natalie's in Stevenage. Natalie, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Natalie.
So I want to know, is are our sense of taste and smell hereditary?
Why do you ask?
Well, I can't stand the smell of oranges, let alone the taste.
Really?
And I found out, yeah, can't be anywhere near them.
How weird.
But I found out that my great-nan, my mum told me, that when she used to visit, when my mum was younger...
So your mum's nan?
They weren't allowed any oranges in the house.
So your mum's nan hated the smell of oranges and you hate the smell of oranges as well. Well, it's either a remarkable coincidence or you've answered your own question, haven't you?
Well, we'll find out.
But it's skipped two generations. It doesn't affect your nan or your mum.
No.
Just your mum's nan and you.
Correct.
Oh, I love that. I wonder if there's a reason for it. Because some people can't eat coriander. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Some people, it's about 20% of the population, I think. It might be lower. The coriander tastes in their mouth like something rank and horrible, whereas for other people it's a relatively innocuous herb. So it might be something like that. There might be some sort of genetic reaction to oranges that can skip a generation, but I can't wait to find out, Natalie.
I can't wait either.
Let's get it on the board. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. A general question about the sense of taste and smell or the specifics of a revulsion regarding oranges is probably easier to answer because you clearly don't inherit entirely the palate of your parents. Otherwise, my kids would be living on kebabs and curry and they're fond of neither. 7 minutes after 12 is the time. Jake's in Highgate. Jake, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Fantastic. So I was wondering, what is the oldest language still currently spoken today?
And you, by spoken, you mean as in not like some recondite.
Yeah, not like Latin
university academic
like
can speak it, but like a country, would it have to be the lingua franca in a population?
I was thinking something like maybe Hebrew,
yes,
or something like that, maybe. But I don't know enough
to comment on that. I mean, is Hebrew that's spoken now the same as biblical Hebrew, or is it like Greek? Is there a big difference between modern Greek and ancient Greek?
Well, that's the other kind of caveat, isn't it? You know, is it that it evolved
Egyptian?
And it's no longer really the language that it started as, or is it still?
It has to be. It has to be that if you had a DeLorean sports car with a flux capacitor and you got into it and started speaking that language, back when it first, that you'd have to be able to be understood, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you still have the gift of the gab, so to speak.
You might not have the gift of the gab, but you'd be able to be understood. Let's not denigrate the gift of the gab, Jake. It keeps my kids in shoes. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. What's the oldest language still spoken? And do you inherit any of your sense of taste or smell? In other words, does Natalie's repulsion at the very sniff of an orange, does the fact that her great-grandmother was the same, does that have a genetic explanation, a genetic justification? John's in Dundee. John, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, John.
Why is 999 the emergency number?
Yeah, I know.
I believe the first 999 was introduced in like the 1930s. Back then, the telephones were the old-style pulse dials where you'd need to wind it around. Why is it not 111? It would be a lot quicker, surely.
Because if it's dark and you have found the phone, the 9 was the first number next to the little metal stopper at the bottom of the dialer.
Ah. Well, there you go.
Aye.
That's right.
I can't believe I just said aye. That means your accent is contagious. I never say aye. So when I say grand to Irish callers, I've got this weird kind of, I don't know what it is, like a reflex action when I'm in the presence of accents that I love. Ask me what my qualifications are.
No qualifications.
No, ask me what mine are. Ask me what mine are. You don't need qualifications to ask a question. We've had it before. I wouldn't be surprised if it's even in the board game, but it gets me a round of applause. Cheers, John. One for the younger listeners, that. They needed to explain it. They say, telephones, what? Nah. Elliot's in Solihull. Elliot, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on, Elliot.
Why do you get car sick in the back seat of cars? And I say this because when I was younger, I was a child,
yes,
and a couple of my friends as well, on long car journeys, typically over an hour long,
yes,
I feel really nauseous, really dizzy, really sick.
Yeah.
I eventually grew out of it.
Yeah.
But the cure for this was my dad saying, come and sit up the front.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that worked. I never felt nauseous at the front of the car, sitting in the passenger seat.
No.
But for many years, I always felt really quite peaky on long journeys in the back. And this is apparently a trend with friends of mine.
Peaky as opposed to perky. Peaky as opposed to perky. I think I know the answer to this one as well. It's been a while since I had a swing at two questions in a row, but I think it is, and it makes sense, given that it would dissipate when you moved into the front seat of the car. I suffered similarly, though not as badly as you. I just couldn't read and still can't. I can't read in cars. I've got one of my kids can, and it drives me green with envy, because if you're going on a long journey and you're stuck into a brilliant novel, the journey's going to go in a flash. But I think it's because you can see your body is telling you that you're moving, but the brain is not getting the information that it needs to catch up with your body, because you're in the back and what you've got in front of you is a seat. And back when we were kids, the back windows of cars were a bit rubbish and often quite small. Whereas if you move into the front seat, your brain, your eyes and your body are in perfect synchronicity, and you can see the speed at which you're traveling and everything flying past you. And so you just make more sense of it.
So I never had this on the bus or anything like that.
Same here. Because I can read on a train, and no problem at all.
Yeah, the train as well. And the friends of mine as well. Like, I have one friend now who still can't sit at the back of a bus for the same reasons. But I never had that with the bus. It was only over the back seat of a car, and only until I was about 12.
I'm clearly not going to get the round of applause. You're a very hard taskmaster.
Sorry, James.
No, that's how it should be.
I'll take it.
No, absolutely not. I don't want your sympathy or your charity, Elliot. Oh, no. But it's got something to do with the relationship between movement and sight. I'm almost certain of it, but you're quite right to quibble at the...
You've set them up, James. I'll let someone else knock them
there
down.
There we go. Thank you, Elliot. What's that about then? How come Elliot used to feel car sick in the back of the car and then feel fine when he moved to the front? 0345 60 60 973. Quite a lot of response via text saying I might have got that telephone question wrong. Oh, we'll have to wait and see. I'm not giving back the round of applause. Remember, the best contribution to the programme at this stage in proceedings wins a Mystery Hour ball game. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. My decision is final. Can be either a question or an answer, but the one I enjoy the most wins a board game. And I can tell you now, it had very little to do with me, the genesis of that board game, which is probably why it's so brilliant. I got so many lovely messages over Christmas, including pictures. I don't know why I found it so moving. It was just this idea that I popped round to yours for a quick drink over Christmas, and we both enjoyed the experience. You find out more at mysteryhour.co.uk. It is 13 after 12 is the time. Stephen is in South Harrow. Stephen, question or answer?
James, hi. I've got a question for you regarding the honours system. Okay, if you or I, more likely you, were to be awarded a knighthood...
Not under this lot, mate. Carry on.
Our wives would be known as Lady Stephen or Lady James, would they not?
Or O'Brien, whatever.
Or
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So... if the situation were reversed and one of our wives were awarded a damehood...
Very likely, in both cases.
Very likely, okay, especially yes. In my case. Would we, the men, have a title or a courtesy title? Would we become a Sir Stephen or a Sir James? And if not, why not?
You'd think that there would be something, wouldn't there? But I don't think there is. I know the answer for dames... Is the dame an equivalent of a knighthood? Is it a dame? Is it a female dame?
There is nothing like a dame, is there?
There is nothing like a dame, Stephen. So that is, I think, the answer, because a knighthood, the female equivalent of a knighthood is a damehood, and the husband of a dame stays as a plain old mister.
So the question is, if that is the case, why is that?
Sexism. So it's the persecution of men. There's also an International Women's Day, but there's no International Men's Day. Don't at me, there is, it's a joke. Follow Richard Herring, find out more. But it is this, it's evidence that all the incels are correct. All the people who think that the world is being reordered to give far too much power to women. It's yet more evidence that the really, truly persecuted minority in this country are middle-aged, married men whose wives have been given damehoods.
God, I think you're right. So maybe I should refuse the damehood on my wife's behalf.
Well, either that or get yourself out there, Stephen, and start doing it enough to merit a knighthood. I think large donations to the Conservative... Change your name to Oleg and make an enormous donation to the Conservative Party. You'll be in the House of Lords by Christmas. Oh, too late, mate. Sorry. You've missed that boat. You've missed that Sharon boat.
That boat sailed.
You'll have to find something else. Stephen, thank you. Round of applause for me. I'm not giving this one back either. The reason I know this is because I actually know a dame socially, but I'm not telling you any more than that. It would undermine my... working class hero credentials. It's 12:16.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 60 60 973.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. A little surprised earlier, I don't know if you were listening, that there were a couple of oligarchs on the sanctioned list that my friend Bill Browder had not heard of. He's a world authority on oligarchs who should be sanctioned. One of them called Lebedev, but not linked to the Lebedevs that sit in the House of Lords and own the Evening Standard newspaper and employed George Osborne as editor of the Evening Standard and invited Boris Johnson to a massive knees-up in Italy that he reportedly gave his security detail the night off when he attended before being photographed looking extremely dishevelled on his way back to London at an Italian airport. So nothing to do with those Lebedevs, but I was a little surprised Bill didn't know who they were. Sadly, I'm not surprised to learn that when the Foreign Office, Priti Patel's Foreign Office, put a picture of this Lebedev bloke up on their Twitter account not long ago, they accidentally used a picture of Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president, instead. So, you know, finally getting a grip on things over at the Home Office. But remember, if you're going to slag off Priti Patel, whatever you do, don't mention Boris Johnson. Oh, and John Burko is a bully. 20 minutes after 12 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour. John's in Buckhurst Hill. All right, John, bring it on. Give me my medicine.
Slap bottom.
Steady on.
James.
Just the wrist, I think.
Well, slap on the wrist. I answered this question 4 years ago.
Yeah,
James.
Yeah. Well, no one's counting except you.
Nowadays, dialing is done via tone dialing, and you use a frequency. Going back when the 999 service was first brought in, signalling was done via two wires.
Yes.
If you look at the, if you look at old houses, you can still see some of those like candlesticks on the on the on the ends of these old houses.
Yes, that's right.
These were open wires. There was no insulation on there.
Yeah.
So when the wind blew or when the wind blew and it was in hot weather, these wires sometimes would sag.
Right.
And they would touch, and that would cause a pulse. Now, if you had a signal in for 999 or for the emergency services,
yes,
of the three pulses, that could easily be affected by the wind or caused by the wind.
Yes.
The wind would never cause three pulses of 999.
Yeah. So so it was just the most pulsy number available, really.
It was the hardest number or the hardest amount of pulses that, that nature could replicate.
God, do you know, I'm so old now, John. I've forgotten that completely. But now you mention it, yes, I do. I mean, it's a more complicated answer than mine. So the placing of the nine on the dial has absolutely nothing to do with the 999.
Nothing to do with it at all, no.
And, but to answer John in Dundee's question, I see he's been on Twitter self-flagellating himself for asking a rubbish question. Never do that, John, because if it feels like a rubbish question, more often than not on Mystery Hour, it turns out to be a brilliant question later, and you would have been wise to tell me to shut up and go away and shut up. So the reason why it's not 111 is that you feasibly could have meteorological conditions doing a fake 111 on the pulses.
Exactly.
Because the pulses now
are frequency orientated and not not pulses.
It doesn't matter at all now, but the 999 it's encased in our consciousness as the emergency number.
Exactly.
And the American system would just have been different, would it? And they had 911 or...
Well, they've got different... 911, probably similar with the 9.
Yeah?
But
whatever, doesn't matter. You've given us enough. What did you do with your last round of applause? Have you still got it?
I've still got it. I still stored it. I think this is my third round of applause.
Well, you've got a hatchet. You're going to need a new shelf in your trophy cabinet. There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did that one make the board game? Don't ring in to tell me that. Just drop me a tweet or something like it. Should have done that. If it's not in the board game, I'll put it in the booster pack that's on the way later this year. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Baron is in Maidstone. Should have phoned in about the question about honours and knights and dames, Baron. You'd be well qualified to answer that,
no.
Baron.
No, there's just corruption. There's only one word for that.
But, question of ours. You're not the Baron of Siberia, are you, by any chance?
not too far. My dad was probably not a good time to drop that into the conversation, but my dad was a Soviet who escaped Stalin, in fact. He got out under
it's
the...
It's a very good time to drop that into the conversation. He's demonstrating that not looking at anything new. Oh, he knows nothing new in history, just repetitions and recyclings. What have you got for me, a question or an answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
It's simply on the while you feel sick in the back of a car. That's something I sort of looked up long, long time ago because it was horrendous in the old days, especially when your parents used to smoke in the car as well.
Yes.
And they'd wind the window down that 1 inch at the front.
They wouldn't even do that. My mate's dad used to put the heater on full. He used to give us a lift to work in Worcester when I worked.
The heat makes it worth.
I worked at River Island and Chris worked at Waterstones Bookshop in Worcester, and we get a lift in with his dad. His dad changed job, and so for about a fortnight, we got a lift in with him. We were made up because we saved the money on the train fare, and it's much... And after that, we said, we can't do it anymore. I've got emphysema. It was absolutely incredible. We used to play the Stone Roses, so he'd let us choose the music, but he wouldn't open the window. I digress slightly, Baron. What I've forgotten what you've rung in about. Getting car sick in the back of a car, but not the front.
It was sick in the back of the car. Yeah, I think a lot of people probably did die of passive smoking, but there's never a new record to that, is there?
No.
So my feel sick... I mean, it's really just a very old response to, and you're right. It's what you can see, but if you sit in the car, your ears are telling you something. So you've got fluid flapping around in the back of your ears,
yes,
and it's telling you you're moving. But the eyes are seeing static objects, and if you've got a disassociation between what your ears are telling you and the feedback from your eyes, then there's probably something wrong. You know, we haven't evolved with cars just like foxes and rabbits running across the road.
Yes.
So it says there's something wrong. You've probably been poisoned. You probably need to throw up your food, whatever you've just eaten.
Oh,
there's probably something wrong with it.
So the nausea is deliberate.
It's a life-saving, it's a very ancient part.
And when you get into the front, your eyes are taking in more information that your tallies with your ears. And perhaps the answer as to why we're all right on trains... or even buses is going to be something to do with suspension, is it?
It's probably, yeah. I mean, they don't swing round corners like cars do. They don't go over speed ramps. They're generally quite smooth.
Yes,
in
exactly.
fact, probably the repetition of the tracks was probably quite soothing than anything else. But yeah, if you sit in front of the car, you'll probably be looking out.
I remember back in many, many years ago when I used to be a diver, I remember one time going out in a rib and we'd bounce around and it would all be fine. And as we were slowing down, you'd start to look down just to sort your boots out and get your kit. And that's usually when I would kick off as well. And,
well, there you go.
Yeah, you know, being thrown around.
Ears and eyes.
To save your life.
Ears and eyes. Eyes and ears.
Yeah. And never actually been, the funny thing is, never actually threw up, but always felt like.
Yeah, but that's it though, isn't it? And that's probably why it gets better with age, because it's not hardwired into you and you almost have a bit of learned behaviour.
I think, well, you see, when you get older, where do you tend to end up? Not the back. You're a driver now, so you're less likely to
be. I don't like sitting in the back. You're probably right. Qualifications?
Sorrible. Oh, general geek, lots of biologists in my family. Alexander Fleming was my relative. I probably should have been a biologist or physicist.
Are you serious? Oh, don't say that. Yeah. We saw a gravestone the other day, and it said something like that. Someone had it on their gravestone.
Yeah, it's buried in
not Alexander Fleming's gravestone. We saw just a random gravestone, and it said something like, I should have been a doctor or I should have been an engineer.
Oh, God, that's... you
isn't
probably
that poignant?
Don't have a regret on your gravestone.
I know. My daughter spotted it. I can't remember where we were. Might have been Old Brompton. Anyway, you get a round of applause, Baron.
Oh, thank you
Thank you, sir. Very
thank
nice.
You, James.
Lovely answer.
Good work.
Thank you. You carry on. 27. I was going to ask him about diving because they found Shackleton's boat, but I think that the anecdote limit had been reached with the story about my mate's dad's car. Martin's in Morecambe, or Morecambe, as we used to call it when we were pretending that we'd been on exotic holidays. Martin, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on, mate.
Yeah, what's been going on in the last couple of weeks in the Ukraine? Studying a map book, looking at all the surrounding countries, I was suddenly wondering that why Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan, there's another two or three more, Pakistan, and why do they all end in Stan?
It's a good question.
What's the reason for the Stan?
Must be. I mean, they're probably all Soviet names, are they? I don't know. Soviet era names, so it might be the Russian word for state or something like that.
What about Pakistan then?
Yeah, all right, clever clogs, that'll do.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Well, hang on, where are these countries? Afghanistan, just let me get a picture in my head. The one I can never pronounce, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Afghanistan. It's going to be Persian then, isn't it? It's not going to be Russian. It's going to be something to do with the Persian language, I'd have thought.
Yeah, we won't have a clue, mate. That's why I'm phoning in.
Yeah, all right, I'm trying to work it out as we go. Do you know what the weird thing is, Martin?
No.
We only really went on holidays to two places when I was a child. One of them was Morecambe, which when I started at private school, and it turned out all my mates were going to places like Barbados, my dad said, tell them you went to Morecambe, they never would have heard of it, and it worked for a while. So they thought I'd been somewhere exotic. And stay where you are, Martin, because Mick's on the other line. And the only other place we ever went on holiday when I was a kid, Mick, where are you?
I'm in Filey, in North Yorkshire.
Unbelievable! This is like the biggest coincidence ever! My Uncle John Williamson had a cottage in Filey, Mick. I wouldn't be able to tell you where it was, but we used to go out to Scarborough for the ice cream. Anyway, I'm doing too much anecdotes, not enough mysteries. Why do you have it? Well, we'll find out, Martin, but it will be something to do with the Persian word Stan meaning something.
Okay, James, thanks very much.
I bet you a tenner.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll try and give it to you one day if I bump into you.
Carry on. What does Stan mean at the end of words? We better squeeze in Mick. I can't. I've got to leave him on hold. This is what I mean. Too many anecdotes, not enough mystery. We'll get to Mick quickly in Filey after the very latest news headlines with Amelia Cox.
UK Export Finance can help your business realise its export potential. In 2020 through 21, we provided £12.3 billion of support for UK exports by providing government-backed finance and insurance. We can help you win contracts with attractive finance terms. Got orders overseas? Fulfil them with a working capital loan. Entering a challenging market? Get paid with the right insurance.
To get the exporter's edge, search UK Export Finance or call us on 0800 538 5111.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
Poor old Mick in Filey. I've got to take Louise quicker in Salford because everyone's ringing in about Stan, apparently. So, Louise in Salford, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
And it's about the Stan question.
Yes.
That it means land.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. Oh. But the reason I know is because I worked with, I used to work be a family support worker. I worked with people from all different backgrounds.
Yes.
And they explained to me, a family from Pakistan explained to me the meaning of Pakistan and that the stan meant land and that that is, that's what it means. All the stans mean land.
It's more, I believe, it's more of a kind of place rather than land. Like where I am, it means where. But I'm going to give we're going to give you the round of applause, and I'm going to urge everybody else to stop.
Oh my god!
To stop. Hang on a minute. I should have stopped you. I mean, because it's going to be Persian or Urdu. That's the point, or Persian and Urdu possibly. But it doesn't mean land. It means more of a kind of where I am.
Place.
Yeah. Place
their
is better.
Place, their land.
That's it.
Yeah.
So everyone else, stop ringing in on this because Louise is getting. And now you can have your round of applause uninterrupted, Louise. There you go.
So I've always been excited to phone in, and I'm really glad I am.
Look at that, knocked it out of the park. And the lesson is, of course, always ask people questions, and then you'll get information that one day you might be able to use on Mystery Hour to win yourself a round of applause. And I need to write down Louise's name because I'm keeping a list of everybody who has rung in order. I forgot who asked the stand question. Who asked the stand question? Oh, it was Martin, wasn't it? And where's Mick gone now?
Don't worry about Mick, he's coming back.
All right, Hugh's in Hampstead. Hugh, question or answer?
Well, it's a continuation of the stone.
Okay, go on, quickly, though.
It does mean land, but it actually means land of.
Land of. That, as so, in, I am the land of me, so my land. I am from the land of Turkmen.
But it becomes where all the Persian Empire used to be. They used to call it land of whatever Kyrgyzstan or Kyrgyz or Kazakhs.
The tribes, essentially.
Exactly.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Lovely addition to the qualifications.
Persian.
That'll do. Round of applause. In fact, I'm interviewing Omid Jalili after this for full disclosure.
Oh, I met his dad a few years ago.
There you go. Right. Small world, isn't it, Hugh?
Yes.
Lovely stuff. 12:36 is the time. Mick's in Filey. Lovely part of the world. Used to go there as a kid. Mick, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Mick.
Why is a corned beef tin shaped like a corned beef tin?
Now, I know this. This has come up before, and I'm going to kick myself if I get the wrong answer. It's so it comes out easy.
Does it?
Yeah, so it's partly so you can have the key on top. You can't have that on a round tin, I don't think. No, you can't, can you? Because it would snap off. You can't peel back a round tin lid. And it's, there's all sorts of, it's to do with storage, it's to do with getting the meat out of the tin easily, and it's to do with the key on the top, but you're not going to take that, are you? You want a definitive answer.
Well, no, but you can get tins of chopped ham and pork that are a similar shaped tin with a key on the side, but they are not corned beef tin shaped.
Well, that's Fray Bentos. That's because all the corned beef in the world comes out of the same factory in Argentina. Probably not even Argentina now. I'm saying it so confidently. I'm no doubt making a complete prune of myself. But that is. I think all the doesn't all the corned beef in the world come out of one company or one country? Might not be Argentina, but it's around there. So that which bit are you objecting to in my answer? Don't say all of it.
No, I'm not objecting to any part.
So the key, you'd have a key.
Superior knowledge.
Yeah. So that. I can't remember. All right, you win. I'll put the question on the board. What, is it nice in Filey this time of year?
It's lovely today, yes.
I spent weeks there as a kid. I'm not sure I ever saw the sun once, Mick.
Oh, it's there today.
You get the sun in Scarborough, which is, 5 miles away?
Something like that, yeah. It's never to Filey today.
No, I'm only joking. Love Filey. 12:38 is the time. And one day I might take my children on some of the holidays I went on as a child. They may never recover. Mark's in Barrow-in-Furness. Mark, question or answer?
Hello, it's an answer. Oldest language still spoken.
Have you done this one before?
Not this particular topic, no.
Are you sure? Do you keep notes? Do you keep a record, Mark?
I keep a record.
There we go. So I trust you. I trust you implicitly. Uruguay, isn't it, with the Fray Bentos, not Argentina. Anyway, I digress. Carry on. Oldest language in the world. What do you reckon? Still spoken.
The oldest language still used. The best short answer is Chinese. We have it written from 2,000-3,000 BCE. the languages that we have written earlier, but they're no longer spoken, like Sumerian and Egyptian.
Yeah.
Chinese has diversified and changed a lot in that time. But the idea of it being a single culture and the writing system encouraged people to think of it as still the same language.
Lovely. If I turned up
But that
in...
is an issue.
What is an issue?
That how much a language changes and diversifies. Yes. For example, we've got Greek, which has changed a lot over a long period, but it's remained thought of as one language.
And same alphabet.
Whereas Latin has diversified into French and Italian and Spanish and so on.
And Latin,
so they don't think of themselves as speaking Latin
so
now.
So if I went to ancient China speaking modern Chinese, would I be understood?
No.
Oh.
There's too much change in that time. But it's still counted as the same language. Same if you went to old English speakers where they had Beowulf and that.
You
wouldn't
understand
them and they wouldn't understand you, but it's still regarded as English.
How far before Chaucer was Beowulf? About 1,000 years?
That's 1,000 years. I mean,
because you could understand what Chaucer was saying if you met him now, but you couldn't understand what the Beowulf fellow was saying.
There was a big change between Old and Middle English for various reasons.
Yes, there was.
Hebrew was mentioned.
Hebrew's
a special case.
Go on.
Well, unless you believe biblical fundamentalist ideas that it was the first language of humanity, and we don't now believe that.
Sure. Oh, have we lost him? The phone lines. Okay, he's dropped off. We'll try and get him back. I'll have a quick word with Sean, who's in Bletchingley. Question or answer, Sean?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on, Sean.
Where do birds go to die?
They don't. They just die. It's not like an elephant graveyard.
I have lots of bird feeders.
Yeah.
And
you never see a dead
they
bird.
Are covered in blue tits. They're covered in every household bird.
Yeah.
Very occasionally, a bird might hit one of the windows in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the lifespan is of a common garden bird, but you don't see hundreds and thousands of them dead everywhere.
No, because they get eaten.
So where do they go?
Into the tummies of foxes and cats and things.
Are you sure?
Yes, of course I'm sure. Where else do you think they go? Fairyland?
It does seem really, really odd.
It doesn't seem really, really odd. I'll tell you what.
The amount of birds that we actually have.
It does not seem odd at all. Can I ask how many people live in your house?
Me.
Just you at the moment, is it?
Yes.
Okay. That's not going to work. Imagine my house, right? I've got two kids and a lovely wife.
Yeah? Yes.
Imagine if I left a packet of biscuits out on the kitchen table.
Yes.
And then you ring me next week and say, where do all the biscuits go when you leave them out on the kitchen table? That's what you're doing with birds.
No.
Yes, that's what you're doing.
No.
Yes.
It's the same.
Delicious...
There must be thousands and thousands of birds dying just in my
thousands and thousands of biscuits in this country. Just walk into any supermarket. A bird to a predator is a tasty snack in the way that a biscuit is to an O'Brien.
Right.
That's where else do you think they go? What was your theory when you rang in, Sean?
Well, my theory My theory was there might be a more complicated answer.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure how many birds a fox can get through.
No, it's not going to be just one fox, is it? You're going to have all sorts of predators. Cats, domestic cats will pick a bird up, go and take it somewhere quiet where it can... you know, devour the innards without being disturbed by another animal, the odd badger.
So you're absolutely certain
badgers.
That when a bird knows it's poorly...
The bird doesn't know it's poorly.
It doesn't have a place, there's not somewhere that birds...
Well, if there was...
Yep.
Did you watch Tarzan when you were... Do you watch Tarzan? Do you remember Tarzan? Do you remember when a poorly elephant... And there was this great myth that there was an elephant's graveyard, and if you could follow a sick elephant for long enough, you'd come to this... secret hideout full of dead elephants, and if you could get all the ivory from there, you'd be one of the richest people in the world. You probably
sounds
don't.
All right, yes.
Yeah. So you think that somewhere in Bletchingley, there is like an enormous mausoleum of bird skeletons, secret that only birds know about, and
no.
They all go there. They all fly there when they're sick.
No.
What then?
Yes and no. No, in that I don't think there's a mausoleum.
No, but
when a bird is ill, I can't believe it just drops out the sky and then nobody ever sees one.
You do very occasionally see one. Very, very, very occasionally see one. A very early mystery hour, someone asked, why do you never see a bird drop out of the sky? And the switchboard lit up with people who had seen a bird drop out of the sky. But the massive majority of us have never seen a bird drop out of the sky.
No, so I agree.
Even if they die in their nest, I hate to say this, they might be eaten by fellow birds.
Right.
So they get eaten, whether by other birds, by predators, by foxes, or by, I mean, Frenchmen eat a lot of little birds, but I think that's illegal now.
Right.
You don't sound convinced.
I think I just want there to be something a little bit more about it.
Well, I mean, you know, I want world peace, but we're in a bad week for that, aren't we?
No.
I just don't think there is anything better than that.
All right, can I clear off, but leave it on the board just in case?
Well, I don't know if you can, actually, because that's quite insulting to me and the quality of my answer. But I will make
an... Your answer was the only thing I could think of, and then I thought, no.
When you have eliminated, Sean, when you have eliminated the impossible, yeah, in your case, the secret bird graveyard,
yes,
whatever you, or the fairy that comes around collecting birds like the one that collects teeth, whatever you are left with, however improbable, must be the answer.
Right, it's not improbable, though. It's just the answer is they just get
eaten. It's boring for you. It's boring, is what you're saying.
Oh, shall I go?
No, you can stay if you want. But, I mean, I've got to go to a break.
OK.
Mind how you go.
Thank you.
I'll leave it on the board, but only as an act of kindness. What happens to dead birds? It's 12:45.
UK Export Finance can help your business realise its export potential. In 2020 through 21, we provided £12.3 billion of support for UK exports by providing government-backed finance and insurance. We can help you win contracts with attractive finance terms. Got orders overseas? Fulfil them with a working capital loan. Entering a challenging market? Get paid with the right insurance.
To get the exporter's edge, search UK Export Finance or call us on 0800 538 5111.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 12:49. Natalie's question still hasn't been answered. Do you inherit an aversion to things like oranges? Is that hereditary or coriander? 0345 6060 973. Oh, actually, we've answered a lot of them. I was just telling everyone off for not putting enough answers on the board. What happens to dead birds? That's for Sean. Like it's not obvious. 0345 6060 973. And the corned beef tin. It's to get the beef out, isn't it? But apparently someone else needs to ring and answer that as well. Simon's in Clerkenwell. Simon, question or answer?
Question.
Yes.
Why is it that when you put Tiger Balm or deep heat, like you rub it on your leg,
yeah,
why does your leg get hot but your hands don't?
Thickness of skin.
Well, see, what I do for a living means that my fingertips have got very thin skin.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a jeweller.
Oh, wow.
So I'm continually like... You file and you wear away.
Yeah, but they're still a lot thicker than the skin on your thighs.
Yeah, but even if you get it on the back of your fingers and in between your fingers.
Well, I think where the bone is. The bone's really near the surface. I bet if you put it right on your kneecap, it wouldn't burn much.
I don't know.
Well, go and try it. Have you got any there now?
Actually, I do.
Let's do it on your kneecap. I mean, roll your trouser leg up rather than take them down. It's a family programme.
My calves are so big, I think I'm going to have to drop my strides.
All right, drop your strides, mate. We'll look the other way. Everyone look the other way.
All right.
And then just,
I've got the Tiger Balm now.
Nice one. Just put a blob on your kneecap.
All right.
And how
we'll
you
try this.
Yeah.
I reckon it's... You're probably right. It's probably not going to get... But there's no muscle there.
That doesn't matter. There's no muscle on your fingers.
Yeah, there is.
No, there isn't. Not really.
Not really.
Well, I mean, it's the closeness of the bone. It's the amount of skin between balm and bone that determines whether or not you get a kick on it. It's because it's got to get all absorbed and everything, like a sort of osmosis type situation.
You reckon it's nerves in the muscle?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. I mean, I've proved it, haven't I, with actual science, live on the radio. What more do you want from me, man?
What I'm doing now isn't very scientific.
Of course, it's an experiment. It's an experiment. I mean, I admit, first of all, we're going to have to publish and get it peer-reviewed. But I think for the purposes of Mystery Hour, there you go. QED.
Do you get a round of applause?
Hell yeah.
On my knee. I can't.
Yeah, you're not getting it.
Maybe we need a bit more time to...
Well, if it's on your fingers, not what you mean to put a bit on your thigh now. Go on.
Yeah.
Go on. Just put a blob on your thigh, your inner thigh, where it's going to be even more sensitive.
Jeez, this is getting a bit rude.
I know it is, but carry on.
All right, I'm rubbing it. I'm rubbing it in.
Yeah? Getting hot already, am I right? Oh, this might be dodgy tiger balm now.
You can't really tell.
Oh, come off it.
Oh, it's cold.
Yeah,
I should feel the heat more, shouldn't I?
It's working, though. It's working. Tell me it's working.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than the knee. More than the knee.
More than the knee.
Round of applause for me. There we go. Thank you, Simon. Yeah. There we go. You happy? You going away happy? Satisfied customer?
I'm covered in tiger balm now.
Your trousers around your ankles. You better
I'm going to have to waddle back into the workshop.
Are there any customers waiting? 12:52 is the time. So I went to this jeweller's yesterday to get myself some new jewellery, and I don't know what it was. Maybe it's something to do with the job that he does. But the fellow walks in, and he's covered in tiger balm, and his trousers around his ankles. Another Simon. This one is fully clothed, I hope, and in balm. Simon, question or answer?
It's a bit of an answer, James. Just an expansion on why we get nauseous in the back of a car more than in the front.
Yes.
We have three orientation systems in our bodies. 75% of it is vision. The rest of it is your inner ear. And the inner ear is two systems. One is a sort of gyro system that detects kind of circular motion. And the other one is an organ called the otolith that detects gravity.
Oh, okay.
Now, when you're in the back of the car and you can't see much in front of you, as you say, when you're a kid, you only see the seat in front of you.
Yes.
Your peripheral vision is telling you that there's motion happening through the window. But because you can't see in front of you, those three systems aren't agreeing with each other. So for you not to feel nauseous or disoriented, the three systems have to agree. So your body's telling you that you're sitting still because of the constant motion of the car. So your inner ear system is telling you that you're sitting still.
Got
it. But your vision is telling you that you're moving.
Got it.
When you're in the front of the car, you can actually see the horizon.
This is it.
And so
the horizon, that was the key word, isn't it? It's the horizon.
Exactly, yeah. So you can see that you're moving towards something. There's a steady point in front of you. And so your inner ear is saying to you, actually, it's all right. You're not in trouble. Whereas you sort of think you're in trouble. Pilots get this illusion a lot when they're flying. I know this because I trained as a pilot in the South African Air Force.
There's your answer. There you go. That's the qualifications. That's it. Round of applause for Simon. He even snuck in the qualifications unasked. A little bit of ego management coming in now from Helen. He says, I've no idea who this is on LBC, but I haven't laughed so much in ages. Tiger balm in more ways than one. I can't say my name more often than I do already, Helen, honestly. Andrew's in Worthing. Andrew, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on. Well, I take you by surprise. You're here under a false name.
Yeah, because I'm not in Worthing.
false place. Carry on.
So cans of corned beef.
Aye.
So the reason they are essentially conical is that when they're empty, they can nest inside each other. And when they have to transport empty cans to very rural locations or very remote locations, they can ship in millions of empty cans, fill them up with something of value, and then ship them out full. And the same is true for Alaskan salmon, where they only do it for a month or 2 months
I'm going to disagree with you on this.
Well, you're wrong.
Well, I'm not wrong. How dare you? I've written books about this. What are your qualifications?
I've bought food for maybe 30 years or something.
What, as a consumer?
As a professional.
So you eat?
Food buyer.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm an amateur food buyer. I'm a gifted amateur food buyer.
Yeah, so a normal can is a true cylinder. And a normal cannery.
I tell you what I missed. It's slicing, mate. It comes out in one piece, you see. That's the point about the shape of the corned beef.
Well, why wouldn't it come out in one piece if it was just a round can?
It doesn't.
Well, it does.
Right, if you own a cat, do you own a cat? Do you own a cat?
That's irrelevant.
That's a no. So if you'd shake a cat can of cat food, it will come out eventually, but it's not going to come out very easily.
You'd spoon it out, wouldn't you?
You spoon it out, whereas with corned beef, one slice, and then you can slice it up neatly and serve it up for dinner. You don't want your corned beef like you have your cat food, do you? Because it would look like cat food.
Yeah.
Where you get it in nice, neat slices. Round of applause for me.
Well done.
Thank you for playing. Take care, Andrew. 12:56 is the time. Lewis is in Ealing. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Lewis.
So, the smell of oranges.
Which of your hats are you wearing today?
My degree.
Okay, carry on.
So, You were partially right, or basically.
That'd
right
be a rubbish book mountain. Title. How to be partially right. I much prefer the one I went with. Go on.
That was a good book.
Thank you.
Well, I've read the first one. I haven't done the second one.
Carry on.
But anyway, so like you were saying with coriander, there's a percentage of the people of the population, who taste it much more soapy because they have a variation in their olfactory receptor genes.
Yes.
So it activates more. Acutely, so it tastes more soapy for some people. Not for me, I love coriander. So
yes.
It's all good. So in theory, with her grandmother having it as well, or her great-grandmother, was it?
Yeah.
Then it would have been passed down, but chances are it's probably a recessive gene.
So it'd be the same principle as the coriander question.
Yeah, and so it's just been passed down, so it could well
be. So there'll be more people, there'll be a few people listening to this programme who have a similar response to oranges.
Yeah, as with all genetic variants, there'll be random ones that are going, it's evolution effectively.
And then
there'll be little variations
gene.
That go on, and as it's not disadvantageous, it won't get eliminated.
Qualifications?
I have a degree in medical genetics.
Round of applause for Lewis.
Thank you,
Lewis. Gina is in Reading. Gina, question or answer?
It's an answer. It's an answer to where do birds go to die?
Go on.
Basically, like a lot of animals, when they feel vulnerable, because they're feeling ill, under the weather, they don't want to be out in the open so that they can be picked off by predators. So they'll hide away in a bush or the undergrowth to die. And other animals do it, don't they? Deers, rabbits, badgers.
Yes, but then they get eaten.
Well, yes, they may do, but we won't know, will we? Because they're in the undergrowth or bush.
They're going to get eaten, though. This is the point. I mean, the question is what happens to them. The answer is they get eaten.
Yes, eventually. Yes. I should think so. Yes, circle of life and all that. Yes,
Hakuna Matata.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you the round of applause because Sean was such a meanie pant. I'm going to add one more to that. Yolanda is here from Burkholt. Yolanda, what would you like, question or answer?
I will answer.
Carry on.
To the dead animals.
Yeah.
If they don't get eaten by a scavenger or predator, then they'll be eaten by the maggots from the flies that lay eggs in them and then the worms and everything else, like any dead body.
Qualifications?
My vet.
That'll do. Round of applause for Yolanda the vet. I think we can all agree we needed that, right? This week, of all weeks, that was a very, very funny mystery. A huge thanks to everybody who contributed to it. And I'm going to give the mystery ad ball game to Sean, who asked the question about the birds, which just got answered quite beautifully by both Gina and Yolanda, even though I was right all along. I'm also going to go and work on my new book, How to Be Partially Right. See if I can see
it. I was just thinking when you were talking about the birds, going off into the bush and then dying. Does the carbon and nitrogen cycle have anything to do with that, or is that just plant life and leaves and
as in rotting.
Apple cores and things? Yeah, or do we rot in the same way?
Yeah.
Carbon and nitrogen cycle.
I think so. If you manage to sort of find a place where you wouldn't be predated upon or consumed, as Yolanda reminded us, by maggots and worms, then you would probably just get reabsorbed.
Pilt down shields. All of that.